Silence, silence in the court of cyber. The court is in session. And in this special episode of Cybercast, we will sit down with the ever charismatic Luis Zezeran. How do I spell
it? Zezeran, yes, sir.
Zezeran, Luis Zezeran. Luis is known for making tech engaging and accessible through humor. He is a well-seasoned moderator of the Nordic Baltic Security Summit. And we have in store his unique journey from IT consultant to a stand-up comedian, which I believe it's like very similar theme, right?
Yeah, there's a journey there, absolutely.
So, also, we will uncover pieces of this year's Nordic Baltic Security Summit and explain why it's a must-attend event, whether you would be a business leader or a technical professional. It is mandatory. I repeat, it is mandatory to be there on the 11th of September, this year, running year 2025. The clock is ticking. My name is Ronnie Anhold from Neverhack. And if you like this episode, then feel free to follow, comment, like, heart shape emojis and other shapes of emojis, please. Please, please, please. If you want something for us to talk about in special, then you can write to us to cybercast@neverhack.com. But enough of me yapping. Luis.
Roddy, thanks for having me, mate.
You have been the energetic moderator and host for the Nordic Baltic Security Summit for the past years, three, four?
I want to say I've completely forgotten. It's at least five, maybe six. I forget now. Time flies when we're having fun.
Time flies when we're having fun. But your reputation in Estonia precedes you.
Well, you know? That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Yes, it's been a pleasure to be the main stage host of the Nordic Baltic Security Summit for so many years now. And I love doing it. Something I look forward to every year. I think it's something that keeps me relevant. Like, I get a lot out of being able to go to the stage and ask the questions I kind of want to ask about these great guests that you seem to reel in every year. So definitely keeping me current. And we'll talk in a moment about some of the kind of unique features of the conference that I think make it a little bit interesting.
But Luis, as a moderator, we never speak of you. Who are you?
Who am I? Who is this Australian guy? Yes, sir. I am Australia. I've lived in Estonia for more than 15 years. And people might know me in Estonia from being the founder of Comedy Estonia. So back in 2010, there was no stand-up comedy in Estonia. It didn't exist as an art form, as in like one person standing on a stage telling jokes that they wrote themselves. Now, a long tradition of theater, great tradition of theater in Estonia, but not of stand-up as we know it. So my friends and I, we started to do the first shows, standing on coffee tables in bars in Old Town and having drinks and telling jokes. And it kind of went from there. And we did more shows and then bigger shows. And we brought international guests and we had international friend comedians. And we said, hey, come over to Estonia. It's great. Come, we'll do a thing. And then it gravitated towards being more in Estonian language. And over the years, we did a lot of shows. I guess people know me from being a comedian, but then also I had to grow the business as well. I was the talent manager, the CEO of Comedy Estonia, and I always had to balance those two things off. And I think probably in the last years, spent more time being the businessman rather than the comedian. But that also meant that I got a chance to mentor the top talent as well. So Estonians will know Sandro Igas and Mikael Meema, and maybe some of our international friends also know Ari Matti Mustonen, now very famous in America on Joe Rogan, on Kill Tony. And it's been quite an experience to have mentored world-class talent and seeing how that grows. So a bit of the funny jokes and also a bit of the, you know, fun leadership as well there.
But how does IT fit into that? You were a consultant.
I was back in the day. I have a first class honors degree in computer science. Did a thesis in distributed operating systems, which no one really does anymore. Now we just use like a virtual layer and we don't sort of really use that idea. But Did computer science, worked as a consultant for a few years, worked mainly, and my specialty was enterprise integration. So hooking up big systems together, web calls, web hooks, JSON calls, sending XML. We used to use XML. Oh my God, too much. Mm. I'm glad JSON and smaller formats are around these days. So used to work, did a lot of, not a lot of work, but some of the work in the X-Road system from Estonia. So I trained a bunch of the first guys who were working on that back in the day. I used to be a software trainer as well. So you can kind of see where that was going. I think my first boss quickly realized better than talking than coding. I'm pretty good at coding, but I'm also pretty good at talking. So went straight to being a Java J2EE trainer, teaching web methods. That's by a German company called Software AG now. And all very nice, very good. But then when this comedy thing came along, I think I'd never had art or creativity in my life. And it was sort of this new direction for my life, my heart, my mind. And it's been a pleasure to do that for so long now. And doing a little bit more IT these days, actually finding that barrier, the leadership part, the managerial part. So all things come full circle, Ronnie. Happy to be here.
So you have been moderating the event three, four, 5 years. And so what's your secret? What's your secret for making this serious cybersecurity discussion into approachable, entertaining, perhaps?
I think there's two angles that I have on this. I think it's being a good moderator is you really have to sit and watch. Like you have to be present. And I'll talk about the year before last where I wasn't because of Georgie's really good capture the flag, which took my attention away. Mm-hmm. You've really got to sit and watch because usually a talk falls into two categories. One is the presenter's pretty good. They get their point across. We understand what they're talking about and they tell us some more advanced ideas and we're like, oh yeah, that was cool. I learned something. And when that's happens, that's great. That usually there's some questions in the chat. I can go ask those questions or I've got some follow-ons and we have a nice discussion. Then there's the other type of talk where the audience really hasn't understood. And not to say this happens at NeverHack, a lot of different conferences, right? When the presenter really, like we haven't really grabbed onto what it is they're talking about. And often I can tell that because first of all, I'm watching and I'm like, what is this guy talking about? Secondly, there's usually not so many questions in the chat because people don't know what else to ask. They're kind of searching for. So when that happens, my job is to then, I have to like bring it back to fundamentals and be like, hey, you gave a very interesting talk. Let's bring it back to the fundamentals and I'll go back to their first things for us to grab onto that, what it was they're talking about. So then the audience can kind of get that idea.
So it would be a discussion with the presenter then to
Like pull that back out so we can sort of say, oh right, that's what you meant with this, and we can go somewhere. And beyond that, I'm using a lot of the leadership techniques. I work with this American guy Jocko Willink. We talk about the four laws of combat of leadership, and one of the techniques we use is called the read back. And readback is about if we're ensuring two-way communication. So if you give me some instructions, I'm going to mirror them back to you. And it's really, it sounds like the most fundamental basic thing ever, but a lot of the conversation is just mirroring back what they've just said. And that gives, they understand, the audience gets a chance to think about it. And using these very simple conversational techniques, you can build something that people can follow along and listen to.
It's the art of listening, right?
The art of listening and tell a joke.
And tell a joke.
Tell a joke here and there as well, which is the one I can't maybe give you help on. You know, you got to just find the moment and go for it sometimes.
So are there any memorable experiences or happenings on the event that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, it's been great to do the Nordic Baltic Security Summit for so many years now. And first of all, thank you and thank NeverHack and Back to Cybers back in the day for having the faith in me to let me, I guess, run that stage how I see fit. Look, some people come along, Lucy hired you, do X, Y, Z, boom, boom, boom. Here's the script. Don't deviate, you know, and, you know, yes, sir, no problems, can do. But, you know, you guys have shown great leadership to kind of let me do it a little bit more in my style, let Lewis do his thing. And, you know, I'm trying to reflect back a great experience from that. I like this conference. To me, it's always very practical. I'm always learning something new each year. Like it's not just a rehash and it's not just vendors saying, you know, how great their product is. Like we're really, I always find something new to take away from these people, find fresh stuff. And I've always, the thing that really stands out in my mind is the huge practical part. And it's this capture the flag event that Georgie comes up with every year. Mm-hmm. That I really think is so unique and interesting.
George is blushing right now.
He is. It's so unique and interesting. And it's something that's really, I don't see in many other conferences. It's a really practical element. And so if you've never been to the conference before, what it is, it's a practical cybersecurity challenge. And Georgie's come up with, it's called Capture the Flag, like a series of tests. You've got to be like a Sherlock Holmes of cybersecurity. And it's going to be things like go to this URL and see what you can find. And you've got to, maybe there's a file to download, or you've got to pick through the HTTP headers for some reason, or you know, it'll be like download this file and it'll just seem like nothing. But if you add the .jpg at the end, it turns out to be a JPEG. But then he's done it so well that you make it .bmp and it's a bitmap. But then it'll be not even that. It turns out actually the hidden message is a third thing deep inside metadata inside the file. And you've got to go and use increasingly, like the first few steps are pretty straightforward. Like you can do just with a text editor, maybe even on your phone. Mm-hmm. And they kind of ramp up to like quite detailed, like what you're going to need to, what hacking is. It's a very good job at demystifying what hacking is. Demystifying the steps that are going on, because I think if someone can follow some of these steps, like, oh, I've got to download a file and look through a file and use some other tool to analyze the binary a little bit, that also gives us insight as to what it's about, what hackers might actually be doing, right? Oh, that's what it might, oh, they might have to sniff through the HTTP. Okay, cool. So it gives us something to hang on to. It's a fun, practical task. And the first year that George did it was like 2 years ago. I got to admit, I was so engrossed. I just wanted to do it that I maybe didn't pay enough attention. I feel like I didn't pay enough attention to the speakers that year. Okay. And there are a few times I'm like, wait, what did that guy say? I was too busy doing binwalk.exe over the thing. So I definitely learned my lesson that I need to be able to detach a little bit from that, let the people do that. And of course, I have a job there to do, which is to pay attention and be the best host I can. But very engrossing and just really unique thing that I don't see in many conferences.
What's the funniest thing throughout the years that you can remember happening on the event?
Yeah, funniest thing. I don't know if so many funny things happen. I got to say, like it's the Nordic Baltic. It's a good event. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sure there's so good, but I think it's just that humor that comes in the middle. Most people are not as stiff as you might think. And I think that there's a chance to, one interview that stands out in my mind is you had me talking to the former head of the Estonian security services, Kapo, I think is the former head of Kapo. And for me, it is a unique opportunity to get to talk to somebody like that. I think it's a good example of, in Estonia, we get access to such people. Like, you know, in Australia, politicians or high-level civil servants are like some people in Canberra, in another city, hundreds of kilometers away, very disconnected from that. And in Estonia, we're very connected to our people, our bureaucracy, our politicians. And so to get a chance to speak to people like that, I really enjoy that opportunity. And yeah, I got to be very direct with what's up with Russia, dude? You know, to be really direct with him, and I could see what a great diplomat he was, and he was able to dance around my questions and of course give a direct answer but still be quite diplomatic. So talking to these really interesting people is the highlight, and to just like these people have good personalities, and it just takes a matter of like just asking them, finding out, smiling to bring that stuff out.
I've been working in cybersecurity for the past, not 15 years, not 16, maybe 20 plus years or something like that. Yeah, it's a long time. I've been, and then during my time served in the cybersecurity field, I've learned that the one thing that security professionals dislike is sales pitching. So all the presentations are and will always be like problem oriented.
Yeah.
So what's your feel about security professionals? How do you What have you learned?
Yeah, you definitely can't do the BS through that. And it does stand out at NeverHack. Like, there's not these salesy type. Like, it's just, there's not these words where it's just clearly the vendor who's paid for the sponsorship, who's getting up there and saying their thing. Like, there's these points that's coming through. And even if it is a vendor, like, it's good stuff, which I really enjoy. And like, every year, I'm looking forward to again this year, Cloudflare. I just sort of enjoy, I don't know, I use Cloudflare services myself for my home hosted stuff. And so there's a representative and him talking through the latest. I think Cloudflare is such an interesting company for a number of products they do, for the infrastructure that they provide to the overall like internet as a whole is just amazing. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have good content. Now, having said that, you have a whole bunch of tracks. You've got the main stage track. You've got one or two extra tracks. You've got the podcast track. Yeah. I've only ever seen my track because I'm working all day on the main stage. And I know that you've also got the other tracks, very, like, even more quite practical, hands-on workshop-y. Tell me about those. Isn't there two more tracks as well as the podcast?
Yes. Yes, there's the hands-on track and the technical track.
Okay. So what might happen in a hands-on track?
You put your hands on.
Hands on one.
So this year we're going to have a really special hands on track, but I don't want to. I can't speak because we haven't shaken any.
Okay, what did you do last year? Give us some examples of what happened at last.
Well,
year's
the hands on track is more like how do you say experience or more use case oriented, I would say.
Okay.
So that means hands-on. Mm. But this year there will be even more hands-on for sure. But I cannot say at the moment what's going to happen.
And what's the other track? Sorry, you
said? Other track is technical track.
Technical track.
Technical track is talking about mostly technology. Mm-hmm. So that's the technology oriented track.
Okay, that's the super nerdy, that's the super deep level.
Yes,
like, if you really want to get in the weeds, that's
Sort of like that. But how do you prepare? How do you prepare as a moderator? How do you prepare for example, this year's event?
Good question. I want to tell you that, oh, it's weeks of preparation and there's deep insights that I'm looking deeply into everyone's. There's a balance to find. We can also over-prepare with this. I would say rather than, I'm reviewing the speakers, reviewing the bios and making sure I broadly understand what's happening. I think for me, it's a lot of being in the moment on the day. I will write notes as the talk is happening there. I'm always making my own questions. So if the audience is never going to ask a question, no problems. I've got a bunch in my back pocket to get us going. Now, if the audience does ask questions, awesome. We're going to use those or some combination because I'm looking to find a certain narrative as well through the questions. Again, to what I said before, to bring out what I think are the key points. So maybe that's it. With my technical background, I'm sort of like have some idea of what I think we need to bring out from this person's talk or what they have or maybe have not brought out, and I want to do that. So I'm going to throw in some of mine that do that, and if of course bringing in the audience questions as well. But one thing I always need at every and everyone behind the scenes knows this, I need my desk.
That's a ritual.
It's my ritual. Mm-hmm. I need the desk. I set the computer up. I need power. Excuse me, guys, can I get a power board over here? And it's my desk for the day. And I need that space. I don't just sort of sit in the audience. And for me, that's a place where I can have that focus, I guess, because I really do want to sit and watch so I can write notes, tap on the computer, do what I need to do, and have that space. So then I'm able to then go up, and when I'm not jumping up and down being a crazy person on the stage, I need a moment, you know, a little private place to be that. So I'm still that like nerdy introvert on the inside. It's just that I know how to go up there and project like a volcano, and then, you know, you're drained a little bit, so you need to come back to the side of stage and rest for a moment. So having that private space.
Yes, collecting. So I've been in technology for, if tomorrow there's no electricity, I wouldn't know what to do.
Have you always been in technology? Let's put it that way. You've always been.
Yes,
okay, yeah.
from the dawn of time. I've been in technology.
Sure. What was your first, just give the background, what was your first job?
My first job, I was working in a training center, actually.
Oh, okay. So background in training as well. Okay. Yes. What were you teaching? What software or technology?
So that was like a couple of years into the job. They admitted me in front of a classroom. Yes, and then I could talk about technology. So I was talking about also operating systems. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like my favorite stuff. Microsoft. I was talking a lot about Microsoft.
Okay.
Right. I also did some Linux trainings.
Right on. Okay.
So that's kind of like my background.
That's legit here in Estonia as well.
Yes.
It? Okay.
Yes. And from that time, I remember as a kind of like a pre-ritual, because you had to do all sorts of demonstrations, and you have to bring a ritual sacrifice to demigods. You know that.
Okay. Well, tell me.
A small mammal, okay. A small mammal in the early morning will save your afternoon demo.
How did you, what? So you, what, you just find a, crucify a mouse? What are we talking about here?
No. I'm actually not doing that. But I recall it was one good presentation some time ago. And there was a guy who told in confidence that you would have to sacrifice a small mammal every morning so that your afternoon demonstration would be successful. That's a sacrifice for demigods.
Okay. God damn. Wow. Yeah. I remember as well the early, I guess I could tell these stories because now it's 20 years later. Mm-hmm. It's nice these days to do training, even if it's a little bit of technical training or leadership training, whatever it is, because now I know what I'm talking about. As to the difference would be when I was 22 and fresh out of university, not sure I completely knew all the time what I was talking about. So the sort of being that IT trainer back in the day who was like studying the night before to present what I would be doing the next day. Mm-hmm. And I remember that it was always that as long as you were one exercise ahead of the students, you're okay. That was like part of it.
So I remember a moment of clarity in one of my trainings. It was a TCP/IP training. I was doing that. It was like 2 or 3 days training, and I was running that for, I don't know, it was like my fifth or sixth time running that course. Mm. And in the middle of the course, I was drawing something on the board. I was drawing something on, explaining and drawing. And then I just stood in silence, and it was like, I finally got it.
Yes.
So has that happened to you?
Yeah, the very first training courses I ever did were in North Sydney, so Sydney, Australia, where I lived for many years. And the first lesson my boss said to me was, you don't need to dress super fancy, but when you walk in the room, you need to be better dressed than them. Okay. After that, it's okay. Day two is totally fine. So his technique was walk in with a tie, but then the first thing is to undo the tie.
Okay.
And so to set that level. And because also we were teaching in North Sydney, the two windows to the side had the most amazing, beautiful view to the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Opera House. Mm-hmm. And there's no chance of you competing with that. So people come in, oh, it's so beautiful. I'm like, blinds down. You're going to listen to me all day long. So we had to do that. And also I was back in the day, they came to and said, hey, we've got an opportunity. We've got a training that's going to happen in Saudi Arabia. And it was literally one of those. They're like, who wants to go? And it was literally one of those moments where, like, step forward if you want to go. And it's like everyone else steps back and it's just me going. Okay. So that was me. I was young and fired up. I'm like, I'll go to Saudi Arabia. Yes. So I spent 3 weeks teaching in Riyadh. Had no idea what I was getting myself in for. Huge cultural shocks. And then my story, just the cultural things, not knowing what's going on, being alone for 3 weeks in 2005 in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, doing okay. We did the course okay. I had to quickly learn, especially in different cultures, like how to navigate that and navigating who's a maybe who's a bit more of a boss in the room, who's not of a boss, and you have to learn those structures a little bit, just cultural things.
Yeah.
But every night I had nothing to do, so I was using dial-up internet to get online. It was still dial-up days and I bought a prepaid card and I did that for 3 weeks. And then at the end of the 3 weeks, I go to check out from the hotel and they're like, oh yeah. And how are you going to pay that $5,000 phone bill?
Yeah. Huh.
I'm like, what $5,000? What are you talking about? They're like, yeah, the dial-up, like it's timed local. I'm like, you've got timed local calls here? Did you have timed local calls? We never had timed local calls in Australia. It was like flat 30 cents. No concept that this could happen. Don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so coincidentally, I was being called into the client. The client was, I think it was Saudi Aramco, I want to say, but who knows? I'm talking out, you know, there. And they talked me in, and I think they come and have a chat with any trainer who's keen enough to go to Saudi Arabia. They come in, they're like, make them an offer. Because if you're crazy enough to come for a trip, they think maybe you might be crazy enough to want to stay. And so I sensed my opportunity. And I went in there and I talked with him and he's like, would you be interested? You know, think about these things. I'm like, well,
I have this invoice here.
Maybe, but I've got this really big phone bill. Could you possibly, maybe the company could help me and I'd be considering. And, you know, he's like, okay, we'll pay it. And never was I going to had a chance to go back there and stay again. But thankfully got out of the phone bill. But sure, you are much more professional these days.
Yeah, we had the same thing. We had minute costs for the local calls, okay, and also minute for the internet. So it was like
double, yeah.
Yeah, that rapidly grew. But I have a story as well about dressing sharp. We had this trainer also in our team that was, you know, really casual dresser all the time, with large beard and, you know, unshaven. And he had to go for a birthday or some kind of celebration for the evening, and he was all dressed smart for the first day of training. Mm-hmm. And on the second day he was casual, but on the second day all the attendees came in sharp. So that's what happened.
Because this it's interesting because that's like what the fields that we work in. That's technical training, and it's still a little bit of showbiz. So it's about the content that you produce and how good of a teacher you are. And there is a little bit about optics and how you look as well. But my point is, in technical fields, well, the dude who's unshaven, you know, unkempt, but he could also look pretty legit. You'd be like, okay, this dude.
No.
We definitely haven't got the slick consultant who knows everything from the textbook. So I could see how that angle could be argued, you know, possibly if you're teaching deep, you know, engineering work, that he may be able to connect with the engineers more, but certainly we need to find that balance.
There are superficial things that, you know.
Like they're little things as well. My first boss, I talked about the tie. He also taught me the techniques of getting a good survey result.
Uh-huh.
I think I quickly worked out that, okay, I'm being sent to do a training course and there's not much two-way communication happening. The engineers get taught, very good. Their manager booked it, blah, blah, blah. Now, if I'm particularly good or maybe particularly bad, then yes, some feedback. But most of what goes back to my training boss is through the survey. So if I can butter up the survey at the day four as much as possible, Lewis is looking good in his boss's eyes.
Okay.
So you learn these things. We're always doing it straight after lunch. Hey, let me get to the, you want to have a beer for lunch? Yeah, let's have a beer. No problems. Mm-hmm. And if I could just make the Friday good, then my boss thought I was great. And only years later did they work out I didn't know what I was talking about. No, I'm kidding. But these sort of old trainer tricks. And maybe I did more of them because, again, I was a very insecure young man straight out of university being sent across the world to teach these things. And, you know, now it's nice to have a little bit of worldly confidence at least to know that, hey, I know something or other.
Yeah. Woo. But this year's event.
This year's event, it's
going to be a lot like a training.
It is. It's going to be fun, man. I love it. And I see already here we're talking about AI again, which would be weird if we didn't talk about AI.
Yes, yes.
And now what are we getting into this year?
So we have running teams for this year, and kind of like a first running team that we have is, ta-da, AI. we cannot go past that.
So unavoidable.
That's unavoidable. Yes. But we do not want to talk about AI because we don't want to talk about AI in a sense that AI is good or not even bad. But we want to talk about it in a way, we say it, from hype to practical impact.
That's it. Practical. That's exactly the word that was on my mind right now. Because, okay, we've all heard about it. We all know where it's going. And I think even broadly in coding AI is like pretty well understood right now. There's vibe coding and there's the built-in plugins, and now our IDEs have connections to AI built directly in. So that, you know, whole and coding is something that is particularly well suited to AI, because a machine can produce the code and then something compiles it and we can verify that it works. But so that's all, I think, like there's nothing, not like quite a new thing to say there. But cybersecurity, right? Like, because it's not just a practice, is it? There's a technical side, but then there's a people side. And how the AI is being applied here, I think, is going to be fascinating this year.
So for this, we have a couple of confirmed presentations. We have Yaya Baloo, who's going to talk about ethical AI and responsible innovation in cyber defense. Because, responsible innovation. I think that in the face of AI, we are talking about it can be biased.
Sure.
It can trick into us into something. And
hallucinations as well.
Hallucinations. And of course, this point we are talking about ethicals as well in this technology, which is quite weird thing to talk about technology for. Sure. For some time. So we have also Oit Welsberg, who is the National Chief Data Officer. And Oit is talking about what Estonia has been doing in AI governance. So what's the Estonian experience so far?
At a governmental level.
At the governmental level. Sure. And it's relatively new to have a Chief Data Officer.
I was going to say, I didn't even know that we had a chief. It doesn't surprise me at all that we have one in Estonia, but didn't even know we had one. And it makes a lot of sense and speaks interesting things to, if people are not from Estonia here, like the how our lives are impacted by these great systems. The, as I spoke before, the X Road is the basis of so many of these things that allows all of our different systems to connect up. That we do have the government takes this stuff so seriously that there's a chief data officer, not just a CIO.
Yes. And that's really important, because we're the kind of like a first runners in this one. But this is a growing trend. So we would be diving into the services that have AI in their workload. And Oit is going to talk about that. The second theme that we are running is technologies in cybersecurity. So the question is, paradox of choice in technologies and partners.
Okay.
So how to choose?
Okay. How do we choose
how
our
do we
technology
choose?
Partner?
Yeah.
Okay. There's
how
a
do
lot
we
out there.
That?
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Because there's loads of technologies out there. They're like literally thousands of technologies, vendors who are offering their stuff. So how to choose?
And is that is this part of the services that NeverHack offers, that you can help your customers navigate through these different technologies? What's the best technology for them to bring in?
Yes, and there are like several items of consideration to go through. So this is also something that we do. This is also something that we do for ourselves, and we can talk about that. But we want other people to talk about that as well.
Absolutely. So Cloudflare is going to be there. I see Sunly as well, great Estonian company. Worked with them a little bit before.
Yes. So we have Sunly who deals with a lot of technology. So very very diverse technology. So Sunly will talk there. And the kind of third running theme that we have there is the human-centered cybersecurity, culture, behavior, and well-being of humans in the cyber, because human is the first and last line of cyber defense, you know?
It is, that's right. Now, did I understand, I think I learned this this year or the year before last year anyway, the human services that NeverHack offers as well. Did I understand there was some element of the services that you were offering of the, the human element, like social engineering element, that some of your people were not just technically hacking, but then also like boots on the ground, essentially trying to get their way into offices.
Yeah, that's what Georgie does.
Right, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
And I sort of don't want to speak too much out of school, because I, you know, this is a service you offer. It is a thing, but of course, you know, it can be a little bit good to make sure it's a little bit of a surprise. But this human element is, and some of the stories Georgie's got, like this dude's a real punk. Like he's a real like, getting in there, doing that, let's call it gentle social engineering, to point out where the customer might have these human-centric holes.
Yes, yes. And in that line, we have a couple of confirmed speakers. We have Andero Terras, who is a psychologist, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about. So the human, the first and last line of defense. Mm. So you might not have to go and break into that RSA 22 and acronym SOAP encryption when you can just go to the user and ask for a password.
Right. It might be easy just to steal their codes, break into their car and steal the passcode. They've maybe got the one-time keypad thing sitting there or something, or somehow get their phone. That might be a lot easier than breaking the encryption.
And we have Michael Dick, who will offer from insight from the military side for the human team. And we have also when we get confirmed, we do another episode.
Sure, right? We could talk a bit more about that. I mean, I know Estonia's got the NATO Cyber Command here. So mm-hmm. This is definitely, this knowledge base is definitely here in Estonia of protecting our military infrastructure. And of course, they're also looking after civilian as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's look, very good to have that. I think I want to say as well to have those military experiences, I think are very important, because they're on the front lines as well. They have access, let's say, to a certain set of technology that maybe in the private sector we don't always have. So to hear those experiences and for their efforts to go up against another nation state, I think could be very interesting, because I don't know, maybe you could speak a little bit more to this, but now even private vendors, we've got to worry about, is it a criminal organization? Is it a nation state? We don't know, right? It could be actually either one of these two.
Yes, and we have also a keynote speaker, Raj Samani, who's a chief scientist at Rapid7. He will be talking about a ransomware reality check. Are you ready to face organized cybercrime?
I'll tell you what, I haven't heard of Rapid7 before. Who are they?
They do actually vulnerability management product.
They have a product. They're a vendor.
Yeah, they have a product, and they have a service of vulnerability scanning and managing vulnerabilities. And Raj is a really good guy. Mm. He's worked with plenty of polices around the world, and he's a good guy.
So Rapid7 have a product for helping that. No doubt they've got professional services around that as well. So does NeverHack, do you have some of in-house products that you're offering as well? Or are you just like, not just, but like offering the services using other vendors? Or how do those bits all fit together?
So we offer a combined service of monitoring customer environments for their well-being, mm-hmm. and we use loads of technologies to in combination to assure that, and also humans. We have 24/7 watch, so we have someone always on the clock to see if something's going on.
Sure.
Yeah. So we use multitude of technologies in our service offering.
Mm.
So we have a lineup setting up, but we will not be closing all the stages at once and so, because we live in an interesting time now. You know, stuff is happening.
Yes, so it's not till September, which is some months away. So yes. Plenty could happen before then.
Plenty could happen throughout the year. So,
how is it for you to like book these people? Is it like? I guess I'm speaking as a promoter. So I've done a lot of comedy promotion over the years. I've booked big stars. I've reached out to talent managers. Now, understand maybe there's not talent management or agencies in the middle of this, but you've still got to reach out to these people, mm-hmm. you know, make them offers, make it worth their time to come here. So is that your job, or who's doing that sort of relationship management at NeverHack?
So we have a team. Okay. We have a team of people for that.
Okay. So reaching out to those people, researching the people you would like to bring, and then of course seeing, can they come, can we make that happen, so on and so
on. All the technicalities or technicalities
right
around that.
Yeah.
But last year we had like 20 plus nationalities mm-hmm. Presented on the event, or not presented, but present.
Represented.
Represented, yes. Represented. So we had the third like C-level execs, and we had third like cyber experts, and you had very much diverse roles from IT and tech, finance, banking, medical and healthcare, manufacturing and logistics, government and public sector, and of course, energy. I think that energy is something that is growing.
I mean, it's a vital infrastructure. Definitely would be a big, fat, juicy target if one wants to destabilize large sections of the population, let's say. So I can appreciate why they should be there. And it's nice that you have this spread, I think. I don't think there's such a other gathering in Estonia or the region where you can come for one day and get all this information in one go. I feel like it's worthwhile, if you're in this field, it very much is worthwhile to come and sit and watch this stuff. Saying from someone who watches a lot of conferences and hears a lot of different things, I feel there's a nice spread, especially between the different tracks, that it's a good thing.
And I was just thinking that energy is really important, because if you don't have power, you don't have internet.
Right.
And I truly believe that in the year 2300, we will think it of like a chicken and egg problem. Which was first, internet or electricity? because they get so intertwined.
Right, we need the electricity, and we've got backup generators, but it's fine that the server still has power, but then if we all don't have powers, your phone's going to die in about a day and a half. Mm-hmm.
And you need technology to control the creation of power.
Right, to run all these things. And yes. This is a very abstract point. I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe you know something that... you talk about backup generators, keeping things online, going along, but the gasoline only lasts for a year. Is that a true fact or not? That
yes.
It is, only lasts for a year. So yes. We think about these apocalyptic scenarios and we found the gas and now we can defeat the zombies. It's like, if it's more than 12 months, it would be useless anyway. So
yeah,
another factor in mitigating crisis situations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In zombie movies as well, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's where it came from. And talking of crises, I had a really good talk last year with the guest, Janis Vanangs.
Yes.
He's a Latvian guy, and he's had experience in Air Baltic. He was on the board of Air Baltic when they were going through all the bankruptcy and all the crazy things. And then he was brought in, I think it was. He wasn't on. He was brought into Maxima.
Yes.
After they had that tragic the demolition of the store when it collapsed.
Yes.
And brought him in to change their procedures and their SOPs and how they do things to ensure that this wouldn't happen again. And I think when I first saw Janis's talk last year, how to prepare for crisis, I was a bit like, it's going to be like, this really high level general. How broad is that? How to prepare? What crisis? Any crisis? What are you talking? I was a bit like skeptical, I think, professionally skeptical. And I was very pleasantly surprised when I heard how practical Janis' advice is. It's about having standard procedures. It's not to prepare for crises. Crises could be the terrorists, but it could also just be, we don't have enough sales right now. Like, a crisis doesn't have to be a world-ending crisis. Mm. It doesn't have to be something where human lives are in, but it can be a lot of different reasons we have crises. And the way we solve these things are through standard operating procedures. And I found the example of Maxima very interesting, because after such a tragic incident, it meant that the whole company was like, yeah, we'll do whatever we have to do to ensure this doesn't happen again. And that meant that there was a mindset shift in the company to not only like emergency safety stuff, sure, absolutely. But then they also saw the value of using a standard procedure for just like regular everyday stuff. And I think, because sometimes I think when we want to introduce good ways of doing any sort of business, there could be some resistance from our staff. They're like, you're going to tell me how to do my job. Here's a procedure. I know how to do my job, or something like that. But there was sort of this culture now, this feeling like, yeah, these are really good things. We can see how they've affected safety. And actually it also applies for the way someone puts cans on the shelf. Yeah, that same idea. And I can imagine this also applies in cybersecurity as well. We need solid procedures. And I can only imagine how you've dealt with some clients who are very resistant to procedures, difficult to get them to do them in a structured way. Is that, you know, a challenge that you have educating your customers?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's very human, I would say. We've also always done this in a specific way. Why should we change that? You know, that's also one of the reasons why we have the human team on the event as well, because it all starts and ends with humans, and changing habits is it's harder than changing technology.
Sure.
So for sure.
Right. And these changes, these new procedures or whatever it might be, it has to come from the top down. And it's sort of not enough just to be like, oh, the workers, they'll do it. Like this.
No, they won't.
Exactly. It needs to come from leadership. Yep. Leadership need to be there explaining why this is important. Leadership need to be demonstrating, doing them, and maybe highlighting how, hey, we did this procedure and it really helped here for some reason. And it really helped. I think it's important to show employees, hey, it didn't just help because it made the company more money. It helped because it made your job easier. It made your job safer. Because it made you somehow more productive, right? Showing the staff and the people how it directly affects them, not just, oh, the company or the bottom line or something, I feel is very key to these things.
So we have everything, you know, the event itself, we have summed it up in three words: predict, protect, and succeed.
Yes,
so
sir.
that's the team.
Love it.
What does that mean you personally when you hear those words? What does this mean?
Predict, protect. To me, it's though that's the key there. Like plan, prepare. And that is how everything is going to flow from that. That's why it is first, predict. And it is possible. It is possible to prepare. It is possible to predict. And going back to what Yanis, what I learned from talking to Yanis about dealing with the hardest crises is that we don't need to have a procedure for everything. Like there can be, I don't know, untold number of tragedies or incidents or negative or unsafe things that can happen. And no, you can't necessarily have a plan and a procedure for everything. But his experience was that if you knock out the top most likely ones, and just by the act of getting everyone on board with like good procedures, good digital hygiene, good safety hygiene, that means you are already many, many, many more times prepared to deal with the unknown unknowns that are coming later. And even then, maybe some other, I don't know, tragedy befalls your business. But you can then, for example, oh, we've already got these other standard procedures. Oh, you know, for Maxima. Oh, we don't know how to deal with one, but we've already got a procedure that helps us deal with 200 people at once. Great. I can pick that part out. We know how to feed 200 people. We know how to keep them on site to deal with it, you know, through the pandemic. So because Maxima had dealt with the terrible tragedy of the building collapsing, they were actually much better positioned to even deal with the pandemic. It's not the same things at all, but because they were like, they knew how to feed 200 people, for example, just the most procedural thing, which meant they knew how to look after all those people in the store. Like you can, making a procedure for one thing prepares you for the unknown things that you may not be doing. So to me, this predict is we can predict by preparing as much as possible. That because predict almost sounds like, well, who knows what could happen? Well, you can control what happens. You have that. So I like that that's the first word. And then, okay, protect. We're going to have good procedures of that. Okay, success. Well.
Yeah,
that comes last, consequence of the first two.
yes. And on that bombshell, I would like to thank you, Luis, for coming to the show.
Thank you, sir.
I very much hope that we will do a second one as well in a couple of months forward.
Maybe you can tell more about the people that are coming and be more specific. And
yes, then I believe that I have or we have more to open. And if you liked the episode, then be sure to like, comment, share, and put some heart-shaped emojis into the LinkedIn environment and all the other environments you might see our podcast. It's the Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud. And whatever you are listening to.
Yeah,
this show.
And if you're coming to the Nordic Baltic Security Conference this year, come say hello. If you see Ronnie, you see myself. Please say hello. Say you listen to the podcast. It'd be awesome to understand and meet you. And if I've got a moment, often I don't have a moment, but if I have a moment, just to chat with you about what's going on. So yeah, don't be a stranger if you see us at the conference.
Yes, approach us and say your hellos.
Yeah.
And we will be back in a couple of weeks.
See you in a few weeks. Yeah.
See you in a few weeks. Yeah.
Cheers. Ciao.